If Murray supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grime America Show. Coming at you this week with Susanna and Puran Blair. It's a fun chat. Another chat with some people that just been at it a long fucking time, you know? Yeah, we think we've been at it a long time. And then we interview people that have been at it like 3-4 times long as we have.
And about this deep like meditation and heart stuff, like heart rhythm meditation. Like, I don't think I've ever really heard about it explained or the science behind it in this way. Like, I just didn't realize heart rate variability meant what it meant, I think, either, even from the biohacking people and the way they have this meditation that to match your heart rhythm with your breath. Like, and it's fascinating because there's a lot of science behind it. So it's truly.
Yeah, especially like the breathing, matching your breath with your heartbeat. I've never heard of that, I don't think, in all the years we've been doing the show. Of course, if you want to skip our lazy ramblings, there's always a timestamp in the show notes. Do that. The lazy rambles will be rather short this week. We're in the middle of the hunt week. We do have a big adventure to get into, but I think it'll be best sort of done as its own podcast because it's just too much to fill an intro. And then, of course, we got Tony over from England and Johnny, a couple of lords over here hunting. We're going to get them to call in too once they're back home and settled in a week or so here, a week or two. And do a show with them because we even got Graham out and Lord Paul. We had all three lords out hunting at the same time. We had Graham out in the blind, seemingly having more fun than he expected to.
I don't know about that.
We were watching the video yesterday. You getting all excited about us shooting birds. We were like, well, for a guy who don't like hunting, he's sure like, there's one blasted.
Well, I mean, I'm into it. Well, you know, I want to support you guys in being your best hunters possible, but yeah, it's a bit weird still. But it was fun. I mean, the scenery was amazing. The sunrises and the sunsets and the what would you call it? The plains, the rolling hills and plains and the lakes and the coulees and the, yeah. Yeah. And just to see you guys set up and get it all done. Like, it was pretty cool to learn the whole thing. You know, it really is. There's a lot to it.
Now you see what I mean about ducks and deers. There's a difference there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Huge difference.
You shot 5 deer in a day, you'd kind of feel shitty.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you only shoot 5 ducks in a day, you kind of feel shitty too. But luckily, we've been having some good hunts so far that we'll unpack later, like a couple limits for sure.
And we saw thousands and thousands of ducks and geese. I mean, those lakes that we went by were unbelievable. I mean, just flocks upon flocks upon flocks. And you're in there hiding and waiting for them to come in where you are. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, now we're getting to the part where driving around in fields last night, finding geese, and then tracking down landowners to try and get permission. So the boys have got to do all that stuff. It's going to be a good trip. They should have a good time. We got 5 days left counting today.
Do you have to get rid of your tracks in the field for the
geese? Not bad. Right now, it's not bad because they haven't flooded them yet. So they've just had all the tractors and stuff out there. So it's pretty hard to leave tracks right now. That'll change though. Once they flood, like this guy's flooding his field Wednesday. Once he floods it, then it'll be a different story trying to get in there and get moved around.
That's pretty cool that they're okay with you going in there too and doing that. That's
awesome. Yeah. They'll lose that. Usually let you drive till they flood it. And then you can't anymore. But the driving it's a big help when you have all that gear. So it's going to be good. I mean, I don't have any new supporters to mention this week, unfortunately. I just went through and I thought I found one, but it was the last, it was that same patron that asked that we didn't mention his name.
Right. I know. It's the week has flown by. Like, I feel like we just did the last intro, our last episode 2 days ago. It's crazy.
Oh yeah. This is, well, you were all over Alberta there. Just bam, bam. You drove two of those days. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Then you got a burger at Jesse's. Good stuff, huh?
Oh man. Shout out to Home. What was it called again? Hometime Burgers. Oh my God.
Hometime Barbecue.
I mean, if anybody's driving past Brooks and they're hungry, go to Hometime Barbecue. I mean, the burger was unbelievable, dude. I was blown away by it. I didn't expect it to be like that at all. That's all I'm going to say.
I told you it'd be worth the stop.
Super simple, modern place. You know what I was thinking about on the way out? Is he going to franchise that? I mean, he should franchise.
No, I've been bugging him. I was like,
really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work running a restaurant, a lot more than running a podcast, I see.
Oh, yeah. It's so tricky, too. If you don't do it right, it's a very risky endeavor.
Yeah, and you have to worry about employees and all this other stuff. So, but we do need support over here running this podcast. That being said, we need people to head over to grindamerica.ca/support today and sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation. If you're getting some value from the podcast here, it's supposed to be value for value. So we provide it all out here, provide you some value, hopefully, and you send some value back our way. Now, our monthly people did that. We did. It's not like we have no support. We have our monthlies and we love you guys. We appreciate you, all our nobles in Grimerica. But we got to keep up with that churn, baby. So we need, you know, at least one of you this week. Maybe it's you. You right there. Yeah, I'm talking to you. You go sign up this week at grimericaoutlaw.ca. It's for $5 a month. And if a few of you do that, then we'll mention you next week and be happy about it. Or maybe you're just already a supporter, but you want to give us an extra. We just need support around here. grimerica.ca/support. Sign up today. Make a donation or a monthly subscription and become a noble. Don't be a pleb anymore. We really do need some more support around here as we start heading into winter. If you check that out. And adultbrain.ca, buy our audiobooks. Come on our trips at contact@thecabin.com. And check out Grimerica Outlawed. We just got that YouTube channel back. So people can go check that out after being banned. But after 5 episodes in 2020, it has returned in 2025. They gave it back. So we're there. The old episodes came back. We have 138 or 139 subscribers. We're going to start streaming there. The Outlawed stuff, the free half, and doing some stuff over there. So check that out. Give us a like and a subscribe over there. It would be cool. Other than that, anything else?
No, I mean, I guess we can cut her short because we'll do an extra episode and
we'll do a bonus one.
And yeah, we got lots of really good episodes coming up. So
it's gonna be a blast. And we do still have room for that Azores trip. I mean, people could still squeeze in the door if they want to come to the Azores with us and Randall Carlson. We're gonna have a blast. That's only, what is it, like just over a month away now?
And that includes a private Zoom meeting with Randall, too.
Yeah, not private you and him, but private with the tour group. But that being said, I promise you, you will get some private one-on-one time with Randall over the course of the 2 weeks that we're there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
a lot of Randall, all the Randall you can handle out there in the Azores.
Oh, maybe more than you can handle. We'll see.
So I am heart.org. Paranna and Susanna Blair of devoted their lives to helping individuals improve their physical and emotional health by focusing on the heart. Using their interpretations of Hazrat Inayat Khan's Sufi teachings and integrating evidence-based research, they have created a life-changing method of heart-centered meditation, heart rhythm meditation. Together, they have authored 4 books and trained thousands of practitioners, teachers, mentors, healers, and retreat guides around the world. Also, try /gifts. They told us about that. iamheart.org/gifts. They have some free courses in there, some free weekly courses. I mean, they have all kinds of levels of courses, like free weekly courses, but they also have monthly courses and like 12-hour courses, all kinds of courses. So, yep. And it's also got there's a bit of Christ in there too. That's like, it's kind of based on Sufi and Christian mystics, which is really interesting.
There's definitely some overlap for sure. So enjoy the chat, guys. Support the show. Like I say, grammarica.ca/support. We do need your support. But most of all, we need you to enjoy this chat with Susanna and Pierron Blair. It kind of mixes with our, if you like this one, go back and find our other chat with Howard Martin, was it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think so, on Heart Math, yeah.
Heart Math. There's probably quite a lot of crossover between these two episodes. And that's one that was like hundreds and hundreds of episodes ago that a lot of you new people might not have seen yet. So check it out and enjoy the chat.
Susanna and Pierron Blair, welcome to Grimerica. You're from iamheart.org. We're looking forward to chatting with you and learning about how we can use our hearts better. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, we're happy to be here. Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you.
Yeah, this is going to be good because we were chit-chatting a little bit before we started recording, and what I was thinking about was the heart math. We had the heart math guys on way back when, and I was learning how to use those biofeedback devices, and it was pretty mind blowing like 10, 12 years ago that you could actually train your heart into a different coherence, you know? So,
yes.
But I don't think I've really heard about your work and what you guys do, which is going to be super fascinating because we've also done a lot of breath work type stuff. So I believe that you're going to sort of teach us maybe how to combine those two things into,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Darren, where do you want to start with some background and stuff or?
Yeah, we should start there. Start with the background, kind of how you guys got to where you are now and how you sort of fell into all this.
Well, Susanna,
you were mentioning your teacher, so maybe we can start there.
Yeah, well, that's a story to find a teacher, you know, because, you know, there are all kinds of people out there that that might be great teachers, but it's always a skill to find the teacher that resonates with you. And so I have a background in clinical psychology, and I actually, you know, this might be unusual, but, you know, my thought in clinical psychology was already to find actually a spiritual connection, because I always thought when people give up their mask, you know, we all carry a mask on what we think, who we are or who we want to be. And there comes this mask, right? And I thought when people are mentally ill, I mean, I was young back then, 19 years old. I thought when people got mentally ill, they lose that mask, and they do lose that mask. But then they're so over-medicated that you actually don't get to that self that actually exposes itself, right? So anyhow, then I continued on, and eventually I ended up in America. And by coming from another country with a different language, is a different culture, I got very challenged, and I had to lose my mask. And I had to admit to myself, I really need some core belief system. I had meditated before. I had even taught meditation. You know, I was so full of myself. You read a book and you can do this. And it really helped me a lot. Breathing practices are not that difficult for certain people. I can sit very easily still, not difficult. But to have that when you lose your core belief system, you know, or your culture or your language, and you are out there, that's when I found my teacher. And my teacher, just through his presence, that is what changed everything for me. And there is, like that deep connection through the presence really catapulted me into the inner world, and at the same time connected me with the invisible world in an experiential way. And that is what I wanted to learn, how to be in the here and now, completely available to everything, to all parts and facets of life, and at the same time know where I'm coming from and where I'm going to. That is what I call a core belief system. And knowing this through experience and not through some kind of stuff that is being told to you. So that is what I'm talking about. And that is what we are working with in I Am Heart and with Heart Rhythm Meditation.
My background is in computer science, but I spent decades in the peace movement. You guys are younger than the Vietnam War, I expect.
A little bit. I was born in 70, so.
But that was a big deal for those of us that were young then. And, I mean, it was actually very traumatic, you know, because people were being drafted, right, and taught how to kill brown-skinned people thousands of miles away. It made no sense to me. And so I was safe, though, because I was in graduate school, and I had a deferment. The draft system worked that way. It used all kinds of deferments. People could, if you had enough money, you could hire a doctor to get a deferment. It aggravated me that this was a privilege, you know, of class. And so I gave my deferment back. I said, I'm not part of your club. Take me off your mailing list. I will not go to the draft. And the consequence of that was they really did take the deferment away and made me 1A, which is the you can be immediately drafted category. And I showed up for the induction into the Army and refused it. Well, that's a federal crime. And I had many friends that had done the same thing, and they were in prison. So I knew what was going on. I knew what was expected.
How long would the prison sentence for that be?
The sentence is 5 years. You serve three if you're good. And it's a minimum security prison. So it's, you know, it's like, it was actually a traumatic experience for the guys that I knew. I mean, there was all kinds of, abuse. So I went to the prison. I often visited my friends in prison, and one day this guy walks up to me and he says, "Whoa, here you are. I know you." And I didn't know him. And I said, "Well, how do you know me?" And he said, "Well, you're the one that convinced me to turn in my draft card too. And here I am." And how are you doing? When did you get here? And I said, "Actually, I'm just a visitor." But it affected me greatly. I thought, I have done the same thing that this guy has done and all my friends as well. But it didn't hurt me as it hurt him. And I decided I needed to find another way to find this solution that we all wanted, which was peace, you know. But peace is not the absence of war. Peace is much more profound than that. And that's why I looked for a teacher. I said, there must be something. It's a state, you know. It's a state of being. How do you reach that? And so Susanna and I found the same teacher. Not at the same time, but nearly the same. And we met through him. And then, surprisingly to us, he asked us to start a new school, which we did. And we took his teachings, but we specialized them only the heart. We just want to deal with the heart. And it turns out that's where the power is, you know? I mean, the mind is a weakling compared to the power of emotion and passion and courage in the heart
and spirit.
And so if you want to make change, you need the power of the heart. The mind is just not enough.
I like it. So your teacher, Susanna, I don't want to get too far off track here, but you were mentioning, like we mentioned, we have a trip coming up to the Azores to look for Atlantis. And you mentioned your teacher. Obviously, he was quite also sort of esoteric if he was talking about Atlantis.
Yeah.
Very, very esoteric. I have never met another person who could talk about all the different things he talked about. And he talked about Atlantis, that's at least how I remember it, as if he would have been part of Atlantis at the time when it existed. And he gave these experiences where you were like, wow. And he gave the locations where Atlantis would be. I'm not sure what you think, but what I remember what he said was in the area actually between northern Denmark and in that area, between Norway, Denmark, and those areas, right?
Well, you know, I remember. I had a child born right at this time when I was talking to him about Atlantis, and he had the ability to sort of foresee, you know, who was coming. And I told him that my wife and I were pregnant, and he said, "Oh, Asatar is coming." And I said, "Who?" He said, "Asatar." And he said, "This is the name of the high priest of Atlantis." And I said, "Wow, that's interesting. I'd like to know more about that. How did you know?" He said, "I remember." So he went on to say that Asatar expresses three of the four elements. As is water, and At is fire, and Ar is earth. He said, "This is the name of our planet, and when the people from other planets come and visit us, they're going to tell us that. They're going to say to us, the name of your planet is Asatar." Well, that was his opinion.
Interesting.
He seemed to know something.
That made me think of the meditation teacher I had in the late 90s, early 2000s. He was a Korean, I don't even know what, he was a Korean healer, I guess, just a spiritual healer. I don't know if there was another more professional name for him or not. But he had healed my sister's friend's her brother's back. Like he had a really bad back injury and he had healed this. So we drove up into the mountain and to take my dad, who was in palliative care with cancer, to him. And we did these meditations with him and stuff. And my dad actually came out of palliative care and traveled around in a motorhome for about 6 months before he finally passed. So he had a bit of respite there, but it was... But then I remember going to these meditations at his, he had also had a condo in the city, and it was the Atlantis Foundation was his, and at first, like back then I just kind of thought, oh, this seems weird, but he was also doing like sort of this like channeling from Atlantis and these old, I kind of wish I would have paid more attention to that back then, you know, because now it's
coming like back around. Atlantis expert almost.
It's weird how it happens. Yeah. But I like that we're just doing some books right now on that area that he was talking about, the Arctic Circle up above Norway. Like I'm just narrating today. I was just narrating two books that are talking about that area as Eden, basically the Garden of Eden. So that's kind of interesting that he mentioned that.
Now, is that more from the Hyperborea side of
things? Yeah, Hyperborea. Yeah.
Hmm.
I wonder if they're the same thing.
Yeah. They might be. I mean, Hyperborea, yeah, it's, I don't want to get into that right now. I'm not.
Do you guys have any, who was it we had on the show years ago? Some fellow named Howard.
Yeah. Heartmath, right?
Heartmath. Yeah. Have you guys heard about them?
Yes. Oh, yeah. We know him and we like very much what Heartmath is doing. They have developed some wonderful instruments, which we've been using. It's an important thing to try to measure this biological marker called heart rate variability, HRV. It's become quite the thing. It's even mentioned in diet books, and it's just a general biological marker for your inner state. You know, then the objective is something called coherence, which means that the heart is changing speed slowly, rising and falling as you breathe. And so the heart is responsive to your breath. And that means that we can have an indirect control over our heart by the way we breathe, which is really fascinating and powerful because now we have a way, you know, to work on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sort of makes the heart safe, you know, because through the, how do you say, all the vibrations that come towards you when you live everyday life, we call it stress, when you go through all the stress, it affects the heart. The heart just erodes. and you get all the different heart diseases, AFib and heart attacks, and I don't know, a lot of different irritations to the heart. And when you know how to bring energy to the heart, attention and energy, that is what protects the heart. When you consciously breathe, that brings energy to the heart, and then you feel the heartbeat. Heart mass doesn't do that. As far as we know, we are the only organization that really looks for the physical heartbeat or the pulse, but really what we love is the physical heartbeat. Because when you use the physical heartbeat, you really know you are in your body, you're in your heart, and you get, and from there on, when you align those two rhythms, because the breath has a different rhythm than the heart, and when you align those two rhythms, the way you align them, because people always ask this, so we say it right away, when the breath is slow, full, and deep, you can see for how many heartbeats do I inhale, for how many heartbeats do I exhale. And then you're already in a meditative state. And that meditative state, you can access your emotions, and eventually you can access the spirit and the spiritual beings or invisible beings. So it's a, we think, very simple method, but not for everybody, but for most of the people, it's really easy to learn.
Can we get a little deeper into that? Because how would you, so you're doing slow, deep, and full breaths. Is this the core sort of part of the practice? And then you feel you sense or you feel your heartbeat within there, and you can kind of count it? Or how do you actually synchronize the two?
The idea is that you have two biological oscillators in your body, you know, that set the pace of your life. One is the heartbeat and the other is the breath rate. So if you coordinate those two, now, of course, the heartbeat is much faster. So you need like 8 heartbeats to breathe in and 8 heartbeats to breathe out, something like that. Or maybe it's 10, or maybe it's 12.
Or maybe 4.
It'll
change as you relax, right?
That's right. And a longer breath is typically better, because it produces, then the breath affects the vagus nerve, which is the slowdown signal to the whole body. And so you get this profound relaxation from breathing slowly, especially when it's in tune with the heartbeat. Magical things happen from that integration. This internal synchronization really makes you feel like whole, you know, like together, integrated.
You mentioned stress. Is there some kinds of stress that are better than others? I feel like certain stresses are sort of just part of the human condition, and they have been, you know, from when we were hunter-gatherers right up till now. And I have to think that some of those are probably more healthy than others. Is that the case, or is there different stresses?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, we think in our school, stress is stress. We actually don't differentiate. People come in, you know, they have panic attacks and all kinds of stuff. And it, you can really, what we think about stress is that it challenges you. And if you have a tool to work with stress, you actually can become very creative and follow through with what stress asks of you. In today's day and age, and I think in no day and age, I mean, you mentioned hunters and gatherers, I think they had tremendous amount of stress. I'm not sure if it was less or more than what we have today, but to bring your daily bread to the table is a skill today and was back then. It's just different in the technology and in the way how we do it. But stress really challenges us to rise to the occasion. And we think through this practice, breath and heart, this is what our app is called, breath and heart. And this is the base of the practice. You actually can calm down the stress. Your heartbeat really settles in. Your breath is slow. And you are able to still think. Most of the people, when they're stressed, they stop thinking clearly. And that's what you really need. You say, oh, it's just that. And the stress sort of helps you to rise to the occasion if you have a tool to deal with the stress.
Yeah, it's a growth stimulant. Right.
Right.
You wouldn't be who you are if you hadn't been stressed to develop something that was a potential, but wasn't needed yet. So stress made it necessary, and you grew. And so that was a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, to be more clear about it, Darren, there is too that through stress we can get traumatized. Do you know what I mean? To be honest about it.
Yeah, like people deal with it different ways. Some people take that stress and sort of just shut down or go into some sort of victimization mode, and other people take that stress and use it to build empires.
That's right. But, you know, there is for all of us, I think there's no child who didn't have, no grown-up who didn't have stress in their childhood. You know, you can look at it that way, and you can go to therapy for that. Some people just really hide it very well and pretend, you know, they're all fine. They're always all great. And when you are with them, you feel it because it's hard to really deeply interact with them or to be present with them or have an interaction, you know. So that's how this expresses itself. And in order to heal those traumas in the heart, because they're being held in the heart never forgets. That's the good thing or the bad thing about the heart. If you let the heart remember, then you can undo those traumas that the heart holds, also through breath and heart. That's the magic thing.
We were working with a doctor in Boston that was researching stress. And first he had to induce stress, and then he wanted to see if you could meditate it away. Or how long it would take. He said, like, you know, people get stressed at work. They come home, they yell at their wife and kick the dog. How do you prevent that? How do you de-stress quickly? So he induced stress by the use of ice. He would take my arm and put it in ice, clear up to the elbow, big tank of ice. And this causes normally an instantaneous and intense pain. It doesn't leave any scars, but it's very quick and immediate. And he said, we're only going to do this for a few seconds because we can't have screaming in the hospital. It was a hospital setting. But when I had my arm in the ice, I was meditating with my heart. And I looked over at the ice and I thought, that ice is doomed because my arm is going to melt as that ice. So this is what's happening in life. You know, you have a stressor that's affecting you, but your inner state can affect the situation. So which one's going to win? Is the ice going to freeze the arm, or is the arm going to melt the ice? And you can work with that equation. You know, you can use the power of the heart, which affects circulation and hormones and rhythm, and change your inner state so that you're actually actively engaged in the stress, actively changing it instead of just responding to it as a victim.
Is there, I feel like that's sort of the difference between like those ancient cultures and ancient people. They had to deal with the stress was all sort of stuff that was based on them. You know, it's like, can I hunt this thing? Can I catch that thing? Whereas now in this modern world, your stress can be like dependent on a dozen other people that you have no direct, you know, like you got, so if you're freaking out about food, you have supply chains. If you have a job, you have a boss that maybe you have to. You have to dance around a little bit and
social media.
So social media, all these, social media just sort of flinging stress at you nonstop. I've actually got my algo pretty good right now. I'm not messing with it because it's not sending me stressful stuff. It's sending me the stuff I want to see. So we'll see. I can't get X to do that. I really can't. X just wants me to be angry. It really, really starting to lean that way. But I feel like that's the modern day stress that left people feeling more like less like they have any control over the situation. Whereas when you're hunting something, it's you and that thing and it's up to you. Compared to now, I feel like the stress has got to be a little bit more magnified and externalized because there's like I say, probably in any person's life, like a half a dozen different people that are stressing them out in different ways. Yeah, and maybe they always were. I mean, you always had to worry about your kids, but nowadays it seems like it's in different ways. It was a lot easier to just make sure they didn't run off into the woods or get eaten by a bear than it is to just sort of have to feel like you have to be looking over their shoulder 24/7.
They didn't have a system to fight, right? No, we have a whole system working against us. Yeah, well, see, it's possible to increase your capacity to handle stress. It's pretty hard to avoid stress. I think that's impossible. And actually, probably not necessary or not even desirable, because stress, as I say, is a stimulant. So what we want to do is just improve our capacity to handle the stress. And that can be done. That can be done. That depends on your breath and your attitude and your training and your nervous system, you know, how you've tuned it. So this is something we can work with.
Yeah.
Do you do any other cold stuff? I mean, it's funny you mentioned the arm and the ice, because we work with a fellow, Brandon Powell, who does a bunch of breath work and stuff like that. And he, with us, and he uses it around ice. So he makes us all like get in ice water, and you got to stay in there for a few minutes. And I think it doesn't even matter how long you stay in there so much as it matters that you can get in the ice water and catch your breath and sort of get to the state where you're in control of it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's very good for the circulation. The Germans did this as health training. You know, there's a famous German doctor who just worked with ice and ice water and all, and water flushing and all. Yeah, that's very well known over there. But the thing that we did too is like we speak all the time in our meditation when we come to the spiritual path, parts of the meditation, that we are beings of light, right? And that there's actually light coming out of our heart. Well, Puran, we had friends who was working with the University of Kassel in Germany, and he was doing a project where he wanted to figure out if plants that are grown without fertilizers, if they emit more light than plants that are fertilized, if what difference there is on the, and how you measure this. And so he had actually a whole room built where he measured the light emissions. And so he measured Puran. So why don't you, it was your experiment.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that plants, like the kind of thing that you're going to eat, the plant that you're going to eat has light in it. And you can tell that because when it's cut or injured, it bleeds light. And you can see this visually, in a very dark room, but the photon counter, which actually counts individual photons,
right,
it could record exactly how much light is coming out of a plant. So he thought, well, organic plants will probably, have more light. Well, the thing is, you know what? The organic plants don't bleed as much light. They hold on to their light. But a plant that's fertilized inorganically with phosphates, they bleed profusely. So actually, you want that light in the plant when you eat it. You don't want it to be leaked out before you have a chance to ingest it. So
that's probably part of the problem with all this food losing its nutritional value,
exactly.
Right?
That's right. All this exactly. Food. It's not only a chemical nutrition, it's light nutrition. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, this is great. We have an instrument. Let's see if light comes out of my chest, because my teacher always said, send light out of your chest. And I thought, well, that's interesting poetry, but is that really true? So I sat in front of this thing, and now this thing is operating at like minus 400 degrees or something. It's, it's a liquid cooled. And I had to be naked because clothes also store light and give it off. So I'm sitting there in this cold room, and now it's time to send light out of my heart, But I have practices for that. We have meditations that do that. And I worked at it for hours, and I got, sporadic blips of light, but I wasn't satisfied. I wasn't happy with that. And we went back to the guy's house that was the researcher, and I found out that his son was ill. And so he went to take care of his son, and I went to bed. I was exhausted. And I got up early in the morning. I said, I know how to do it. We went back to the lab, and I imagined that boy, who I actually got to know, I imagined him sitting in front of me, and I wanted to heal him. I wanted to do that. And that's what caused the light to come pouring out of my chest.
Wow.
Using the practices that we do. And I got 100,000 photons a second.
Wow.
Now, the visible threshold is 1,000 photons a second. So this is two orders of magnitude above visible. And this experiment was written up and published, and it's actually been even it's mentioned in a book by the Dalai Lama. he referred, and the people at HeartMath are referring to this experiment, because here's a case where, you know, a human being was actually able to make visible light. And the reason that it's been elusive, you know, that people don't notice this all the time, is because first the body wants to hold on to that light too. You know, mm-hmm. your body needs your light. But in some situations, if you really have the desire to help somebody else, it can flash out. And I think light is healing, you see, and it's there. You can send it to somebody. You can send it.
Yeah. I think those are all the empaths and caregivers and healers, you know, that emit the light, and others hold on to it because light keeps you very healthy and strong and powerful. It's interesting to have the first a plant experience, and then you have the experience where first he couldn't get the light out of his heart, and then there comes where you want to help, the empathy, the care, the healing, and the light flows.
Is that confined to humans, or did they try checking to see if any other animals are just naturally giving off light? Or
We didn't test that. I guess we'd have to get the animal to sit still and in the dark and in the cold.
Yeah, I have the feeling. It's possible. Yeah, I have the feeling dogs do this all the time. You know, dogs that sit on your lap, or cats too. You know, like when we meditate, you know, we have from our son, he had just a baby, he sends his dogs over. When we meditate, they just sit in front of us like our disciples. And there's a exchange of love and breath happening. I think that is very strong. And I think the same with cats. They feel the energy and they pour out more energy and receive energy. We haven't measured that. That is, you know, these measurements are not easy to come by. You know, the
instruments.
The instruments,
expensive.
Yeah. You have to go to different places to get to them.
What are they usually using that thing for? What's the general use of something for sensing a single photons? What's the practical application for that? Obviously, they didn't build it for this.
No.
No, I guess it's used scientifically in some experiments about, there were things that Einstein did around photons. There's a famous photon experiment where he showed that electrons and photons can change places. And so a photon is the same energy as an electron, which is, you know, tiny. So it's not much. You can't see a single photon. You need 1,000 photons a second to be able to see a spot of light.
But there's photons in every cell of the body. So depending if you want to find out if a person is healthy, you could look if the photons are all there, right?
We know now that cells communicate with each other through photons.
Photons.
Not only chemically, but also through light, mm-hmm. which allows very fast reactions that chemicals couldn't do.
Right.
Hmm. Interesting.
I think I remember seeing the pictures of those leaves that were cut, and then the photons, you can see where the leaf used to be, and it's sort of right. like a resonant or almost like a morphic resonance, I guess, that would be
exactly
either from that.
Yeah.
It reminded me of when you talked about your healing story there, it reminded me of Christ, Christian sort of mystical type stuff, and Christ consciousness. And I read that it's kind of a blend, that your practice is kind of a blend of Sufi and Christ. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, or how? I mean, it really made me think of like
our method is not based on Buddhism or Hinduism, which is basically most everything else is based on. Our method comes from the Christian mystics, so they did this meditation that we do on the heart, an early version of it. We it's been improved over the thousands of years, but. But they did an early version of it, and it's a method that's good for being, you know, in the world, because the methods that came out of Buddhism really take you out of your body and out of life, which is what they want. But we think meditation would be, let's say, more practical if it would help you be a better human being. Mm-hmm. Instead of being an angel, you know, God has angels already for that. But what we're here for is to do something purposeful, useful.
Yeah,
the and meditation should help you do that.
Yeah, the practice that the early Christians tried to do was to pray unceasingly, you know, continuously. So when you have a practice and you start the practice and you repeating it, and so Hatha the meditation goes very much like that, because we use the breath and we use the heart, and we actually use mantra meditation, you know, which is where you use to the invocation of the mantra or a prayer, and you repeat it over and over, and you do the heartbeat is there. And when you let go of the practice, the heart takes on what you have trained it with, what you have said, and the heartbeat carries it on through the day. So when you do your morning meditation, and you can just make it as simple as put a wish on your heart. Do you see what I mean? And that your heart carries then that wish. And then in the evening, you can sit down and meditate again, and you could say, how did my wish do during this whole day? It's as simple as that. So, and the ancient Christians, they had, you know, the prayers that Christ gave us, the Our Father and so, and that was done in another language that we know today. And they repeated those prayers, and that way they had the feeling, there's no moment where I do not pray. And this is the same we can do today. And that way we actually protect ourselves from all this stress that we were talking earlier about. The stress cannot get to you when you have a practice that moves through your heart continuously. Whatever they do out there, you are in your heart in a different place, but present at the same time in the here and now. See, I mean, Hatha meditation we think is so important because we think before we were born, we exist, but we are not in the body. Here we are in the body, and we will not be in the body when we have left. And we think this is such a powerful experience to be in the body.
Precious.
There are so many invisible beings that want to come to this world, and we are billions of people on this planet. And these are all, you know, we think invisible beings that are incarnated, the incredible power that is here. You know, we do know when, you know, we have done a lot of meditations with people in person. We work a lot online. But when you sit with a group of people together and you sit in stillness and you do this practice, breathing slow, full and deep, you feel your heartbeat, the heartbeats align each other.
Wow.
And you practically, you can have 20, you can have three people, you can have 20, you can have 100 people or 1,000 people, they come all to the same heartbeat, to the same rhythm. I mean, when you think of that power, why don't our wish is to move in that direction with humanity. To have that power, and you don't need to do much. You can just sit still and feel that heartbeat. You don't need any weapons or any of the things. You can sit still and feel the heartbeat and feel aligned with other people.
You just have to feel your own heartbeat. You have to be very aware of your heartbeat, and then you watch your heartbeat change as it accommodates everybody else's heartbeat and comes together. And it's like you can't really understand another person if your heart is racing and theirs isn't, you know, if you're in the different, in a different rhythm. But if you're in the same rhythm of your breath and your heart, you have a connection with each other that is just, you know, immediate and deep, and without words, it isn't necessary.
That's fascinating. I had a stupid question for you. As a male, especially because a lot of times I'm sort of numb to physical sensations, and I think a lot of men are. So how do you feel your heartbeat?
Yeah, that's a good, really good question. So first of all, if you put your hand on your chest, yeah, that helps because you might feel a throbbing there. You know, I've actually had a doctor say to me, you can't feel your heartbeat. There's no nerves for that, which is entirely wrong because, you know, from when you do exercise, you've got this throbbing going on, you know, you can feel it. Or you lay in bed at night and be very quiet, and you can feel the heartbeat. So, but sitting up and just being still, and you might not feel it right away. It's something you have to sort of figure out, like, where is that heartbeat and how do I get to it? So you practice helps. But if you can't feel your heartbeat, then feel the on the inside of your wrist, where nurses take your pulse. there's a space between the tendon and the bone, and you just put your fingertips there, and you'll feel an artery, and also do it here in the neck. If you can't feel your heartbeat in your neck, you're dead, you know. So you definitely can give this one. This is what the EMTs use. But just sensing it, you'll also notice that a heartbeat is there someplace as a pulse. You might feel it behind your eyes. You know, the pulse is the echo of the heartbeat, right? And it's happening everywhere. It's a question of where it shows up for you. But it's, you know, it's all coming from the heartbeat. And so eventually you kind of trace it back. Like, okay, it's coming from here. It's coming from my chest. And what's that message? You know, what's it like to be aware of your heartbeat? This was the first sound you ever heard, was the heartbeat of your mother. So it's very like being at home, you know, to feel your heartbeat. It's a wonderful feeling.
We have a question in the chats from Ian. He was also I kind of wanted to ask the Sufi question as well. Sufi is, he thinks it's translated as wisdom, but we'll get back to that. About the heart, he says, how do heart meds affect this? He has super high blood pressure and on meds like normal 200 to 150-ish without meds. Do the meds help?
Yeah, well, I think meds do help, but meds also have a cost. They decrease this thing called heart rate variability. And heart rate variability is an index for your ability to handle stress. So if you have good heart rate variability, again, variability means the heart is not beating on time. It's not supposed to. If your heart beat came exactly on the same interval, you'd have a pacemaker in your chest rather than a heart. So you want the heart to have this wiggle in the heartbeat, because that wiggle is the heart's response to your breath. Your breath makes the heart go faster and then slower and faster and slower with every breath. So you want that. And the meds reduce this effect of the variability of your heart, which means it's going to show up as a less of an ability to handle stressful situations easily. But the good news is that heart rhythm meditation reduces your blood pressure a lot. We've had people drop 40 points in their blood pressure by breathing deep and slow and thinking of their heart. So that creates an inner feedback through the vagus nerve. It slows down, everything slows down, blood pressure, the heart speed. It also improves digestion and just gives this overall feeling of, you know, relaxation. So breathing, the answer is heart rhythm meditation.
The advice is really, don't stop right away with your medication. You need your medication, but learn how to breathe. You know,
well,
you
and buy like a heart, a blood pressure thing for home and start playing around with it and do it every day and see how you can affect it. I mean, my partner, she was, they tried to get her on the blood pressure stuff, but we bought one of those things. And then just the stress of her being in the hospital was enough to bring up her blood pressure. She's very sensitive to all this stuff, and her vagus nerve is shot. Like I was going to mention, you know, about the difference between being in that state, that sort of stress state with the vagus nerve, and how you can calm that down, like how there's a physical difference after breathing. So anyway, she started relaxing and doing it, and her blood pressure came right down. I mean, it was down almost too low. Like it, so I don't know. And to me, I'm like, how is this even possible that you can make that much of a change from bringing the machine home and doing it on your own? Or is the measurements just that, you know, the standard is out of whack to begin with, but you know, whatever, that's a different discussion.
No, there's a biological mechanism called RSA, respiratory sinus arrhythmia, which is a biological mechanism whereby the breath is affecting the heart rate. And when you have a slower breath, you'll get a slower heart rate. Mm-hmm. It's biological. And there's actually a second biological method called baroreflex, which also helps to slow the breath, only if you have a deep breath. So that's why it's important in our method to breathe deeply. That is a big volume, you know, big inhalation, complete exhalation. do that over and over slowly.
Yeah.
And it does wonders for all the biological markers that you can measure.
See, Krem, when we talk about deep breathing, we really do this with our whole body, you know, like babies do. We actually engage the diaphragm muscle, which goes horizontally through the body. But the way you move the diaphragm muscle is through the muscles below the diaphragm muscle. So we are below the belly button. And those muscles you can move. You use your mind. When you exhale, you contract those muscles. And when you inhale, you really open them up. And that way, the diaphragm muscle moves up and down. And the lungs empty themselves or fill themselves. And so this is all engagement. You know, your mind gets engaged because partially the stress goes a lot through the mind. And you want to get out of the mind. You know, all meditation tells you, don't have any thoughts. Well, we don't give those instructions. We occupy the mind. We engage the mind. And by engaging the mind with the body, you get an incredible, wonderful result from it. These results that we described to you. And you get slow, deep, and full. It's not even relaxation. Relaxation is a byproduct in heart rhythm meditation. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking more to free yourself from all these stresses, from all these shoulds and have-tos, from shame and from all this nonsense, so to say, that we, collect in our lives because of society, because of our friends, that we look good and be good, and we don't know anymore how to be ourselves. And we have the feeling that heart rhythm meditation allows you to get to your inner self again and free yourself from all these different shoulds and
external forces.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Can you use it for, how does this factor into elite level athletes or elite performers? Are they doing
you're going to ask that
naturally, or is like, cause it seems like some people just have a knack for this sort of thing. It seems like evolutionarily, if that's a word, I don't know. Forget it. We should have had some sort of natural ability to do this all the time. At some point, it seems like the connection there and the results are too profound for it to be just a coincidence, you know. Did we venture off of this somehow? Does it come naturally and maybe more like primitive societies and stuff like that? Tribal societies, are they doing it automatically?
I think so. I think what must have been interesting for primitive people to sit around the campfire and be quiet and notice, you know, I got a rhythm going on inside me, thumping in my chest, and I got this other rhythm too when I breathe. I wonder what would happen if I put these rhythms together. I think it's a natural thing, and it is magic when it happens. It just makes you feel like these parts of yourself are connected.
You know, and when several people meditate together in this way, it's very attractive, because if you sit down with them, you automatically move into that rhythm too. So it's infectious. And what's the wonderful thing. And that's how meditation should be. It shouldn't be hard work.
So this brings up an interesting topic about how much effect can a person have on society, you know. Well, the thing is, we're living on the planet Earth inside a shared magnetic field. Mm-hmm. And this magnetic field, which everybody feels, you know, is partly made by the Earth and partly made by the sun through the solar winds, and partly made by life, because everything that has a heartbeat contributes. Now, the magnetic field of the Earth is a million times stronger than the magnetic field of one heart. See, one heart is a big magnet. It's a very powerful magnet, but the Earth is, you know, much bigger, so a million times stronger. But there's billions of people on the planet.
Yeah.
So consider, together, if we work together, we could have a greater effect on the shared magnetic field than it has on us. And we could actually influence the field that we're all living in and modify that field, because that field contains all of our experience. It's been called the noosphere. It's been called the astral
Akashic record.
The Akashic record. So this thing can be modified, but it requires heart, see, mm-hmm. because the heart has the energy. The brain has, the brain is 1/100th of the energy that the heart. The heart's 100 times stronger than the brain, and the planet is 1,000,000 times stronger than the heart. But if you work together, you can do it. So our ultimate hope is to think that people could work with their hearts together in synchronization and have an effect on the default setting, you know, the standard setting that everybody's tuning into all the time, that establishes sort of like what is normal. And we can change what is normal.
Right now, the magnetic field is seems to be failing, or at least fluctuating in ways we haven't seen before. And moving, do you think that's an effect of just the general state of the people on it? I mean, that you kind of alluded to there, that we can maybe possibly have some control over the magnetic field of the Earth.
I believe we can have. And, well, you know, as I said, it also is affected by the sun and the solar winds. But I think what I have noticed is that when you're in a room of people, which is on a smaller scale, let's say there's a sort of a chaotic meeting going on, you can get into a peaceful place in yourself and change the room. Mm-hmm. And the conversation changes and people start smiling at each other and cooperating and harmonizing. And, you know, you wonder like, how did that happen? Well, somebody can have that kind of an effect.
Somebody brought the good vibes.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, we did another experiment where we were asked by a person that lives in Cleveland. She works for the United Way, you know, which hands out money to people that are distressed. And she said, Cleveland's in big trouble. Can you help us? And I said, well, I don't know. We live 2,000 miles from Cleveland, but let's try something. So Susanna and I, we meditated at 3 a.m. in our time. That it was 6, would correspond to 6 in Cleveland. And we did this meditation for about an hour, and all the crime stats for Cleveland are online, so we had data. See, we could tell if there was anything that would change. We could see it in the crime stats. So I created a huge database of all the crime stats for 3 months, and we looked at which days we meditated and which days we didn't meditate, because we randomized when we would actually meditate. And we found that on the days we meditated compared to the days we didn't meditate, there was a 34% drop in violent crime. That means fewer people got killed or raped, you know, in a city 2,000 miles away from us. I mean, that's useful. You know what I mean? Now, the way we did that was not by trying to send light 2,000 miles. What we did was we imagined... Each one of us said, I am Cleveland.
Yeah, put Cleveland right into our heart.
Brought Cleveland into our hearts. And now whatever is happening in Cleveland is happening inside our body and our emotions. And that's something we can deal with. We know how to deal with our emotions mm-hmm. and our physical sensations and heal ourselves. So by healing ourselves, that then had this mirror effect on the people in Cleveland, 1,000,000 people in Cleveland. And we could see it in the crime stats.
See, when you do this meditation for longer periods of time, so it's this breath and heart, you keep that going, but the magnetic field opens up and becomes really, really vast. So this taking Cleveland into your heart becomes an easy thing to do. There's when you go to the further states of meditation, and you could say, well, it's just imagination, but this experiment showed us it's not imagination, because we really had an effect on those stats. It is just most amazing, because we are, you know, vibrational beings. You know, this is the big difference between this meditation that works with energy than other meditations work with consciousness. When you work with consciousness, you don't have this kind of effects. And we have the feeling human beings have a purpose to be on this earth. But as a humanity, we have not come together to find our collective purpose. I think that is the difficulty. And this is why some few people can control this planet to an extent that is just completely irresponsible for the whole, for the whole of the universe, not just of the planet Earth.
Yeah.
And this is the work we're really trying to do. And you do it as individuals and or as many people as you can reach through this. But this method of heart rhythm meditation is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
And the more people align themselves with it, the more power you have, and you can make a real, real difference.
How does Sufism fit into it?
Our teacher was a Sufi. Yeah. He is a Sufi. Well, he died
in 2004.
Some 20 years ago, but we still consider him to be part of the equation here. And Sufism really started with the Egyptians. It goes way back. It's a kind of a method of all the mystics of all the different traditions. If we say they were all Sufis. Anybody who wasn't an Orthodox, who was actually trying to experience something directly, you know, not through the dogma. There's no dogma for Sufis. It's just direct experience. And we were lucky to find an authentic teacher and to continue his work at his request.
And it's through Sufism, you know, from different kinds of traditions, because there's so many different Sufis out there. It means wisdom. It means wholeness. And some of the Sufis, they were very simple people, very, mystics, what you would call them. So, and that's to the training that we try to provide for people, because today's world is so material and so commercial. It's very difficult to keep to the purity of the heart and to the purity of life and have respect of all life and of all races and languages and see humanity as one being. And the heart makes this possible, you know, that message of unity and of oneness.
And everybody has a heart.
Everybody has a heart. Can't help it.
Some Sufis were kings. I mean, they were responsible people, you know, they involved in their life.
Right. And one of the people that you even knew, he was from the G7.
Oh, yeah. Another one of the students of our teacher was chairman of the G7.
Right.
His name was Vidive, and he was also the managing director of the IMF. So there have been Sufis in responsible positions, but.
Well, I don't know if I'd call those responsible positions.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Is this, before we wrap up, I want to touch on that, because you mentioned, you know, they and the power structure that we seem to be held hostage under currently. What are they using to sort of combat that? Is it just distraction and stuff like that? Or are they using some sort of, you know, they seem to be up to something that looks kind of spiritual, but somewhat evil or at the same time, you know, that they've been caught doing these weird ceremonies. And we've got these, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen how the Olympic opening ceremonies are always these weird, like symbolic things. It's like, do you think they're up to something nefarious? Can this sort of force be used malevolently?
Well, I think any power can be used various ways, but the people that you see in the news and that are, you know, elected or appointed or something, these are not the real people that have power. These are the amateurs. The people that really have power don't make themselves visible. There's no need for that. They work behind the scenes. They work by, you know, like we did with Cleveland. You work from the inside, and you have this objective in mind, and you operate that objective. And the people that are, I think the people in the government are pawns. You know, they're not in charge of anything really.
But see, Darren or Graham, what we think about evil It's like we try to really keep there too with the Christian saying, resist not evil. Don't be afraid of it. The one being is the all. And if there is evil out there, well, then evil is out there. It does not make us smaller or afraid or hopeless. I think, I mean, what we need to know that the angel, you know, this is the Christian tradition, the angel of evil, the angel who became the devil is called, give me the name
Lucifer.
Of it. Lucifer. Well, if you know a little bit of English, Lux Lucis means light. He was actually a great being of light who, because he had so much light, was so full of himself that he said, I'm going to test these humans down there. And evil is just another test that we are going through. That's how we look at evil in this world. It does not impress us at all. And there's a lot of evil out there. And I'm not sure if it's more than it always was, but evil is just part of the game that tests you, that is part of the stresses. And it's what the news does today, it really focuses on the evil because that's how they get attention. All right. So that's what they do.
Evil comes from ignorance.
Yeah.
And everything has consequences, you know. Yeah. So whatever you do, it has a consequence. There's a feedback loop.
Yeah.
And action, reaction. And so you don't have to fight the evil because it's always self-destructive.
Hopefully, in the end.
Hopefully sooner than later. Where can people get the book or follow your work? Do you guys have a website or social media or anything like that?
Yeah. For those of you that are watching this, you can see this little banner. It says IAMHeart .org and then /gift will lead you to the place where we have lots of free meditations and offerings. We have an app which is free, has hundreds of meditations on it. It's called Breath and Heart. And we have a studio where people are leading meditation every day. Live, you know, where you can talk to people.
In different time zones. It's not always at the same time every day.
Right. And we have classes which are very inexpensive. And we have classes which are expensive. They can run for years. We just finished a two-year class. So, you know, we're serious about this stuff. We realize that it requires a training. You know, mm-hmm. you need to practice and to develop these extraordinary powers, you need some extraordinary practice. But it starts easy, you know. It starts like it's like playing tennis. Anybody can hit a ball across the net. It's like that, and you know, get better and better at it.
What are the books called?
The book is called Living from the Heart,
and the other one is called Energize Your Heart, and we have a third one that's called Follow Your Heart. So that's
The Follow Your Heart book shows a labyrinth, the path through life. The path of life is encoded in the labyrinth, and we show how that works.
Mm. Excellent. Susanna and Puran, this has been a great interview. The time just flies by, as it tends to around here. We appreciate you guys coming on the show. We encourage all of our listeners to check it out and get the book. I know Ian said he's going to try the breath work with his heart pressure right away. So
good.
That goes for him. Yeah, he's a good friend, Ian. He's not just a listener. So that'll be good. Yeah, we appreciate you guys coming on the show and come back anytime.
Thank you. Really cool to be with you guys.
Thanks.
You're really cool guys. Thank you for the great work you do.
Thanks
you guys as well.
Okay.
Keep up that work and have a good night.
All right.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye bye. Thank you.
Bye. And that was our chat with Susanna and Puran Blair, A Guide to Heart Rhythm Meditation. So you never tried that one before?
No, I haven't. No, I'm going to, though, for sure. They have some free weekly classes there, too, just for people that just want to check it out without paying anything. So the links will be in the show notes.
Links in the show notes, as always. Huge thanks to Susanna and Puran for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Even bigger thanks if you're one of the 1% that choose to support us and keep us going over at grimerica.ca/support. If you're getting some value from our show, send some value back our way over there, and we'll keep doing this, and you guys keep doing that. So thank you to the people that do. Of course, you can also check out GrandAmericaOutlaw.ca for other podcasts. Contact at thecabin.com for trips and events. AdultBrain.ca for closing in on 200 audiobooks. We might hit it this month. It could happen probably next month, but it's coming. So check that out. And what am I missing? GrandAmericaCBD.com for gummies and tinctures and all that fun stuff. Other than that, spam Graham, Graham@GrandAmerica.com. We love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Somehow I built a rocket ship out of the stuff dreams are made and popsicle sticks. Please look at my rocket ship schematics. Tell me it can fly to the moon. Tell me I'm not a lunatic. I bet you think I'm the space cadet. I bet you think I'm the space cadet. No regret, I do not fret, 'cause I am a space cadet. In my hands I have a gas can and matchsticks. Yes, Earth is my home, but I need a vacation from all the sadness, the chaos, and dramatics. I'll let you do the countdown, 3, 2, 1, no hesitation.
Silver steel.